Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Oh, Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
a grandmother is hauled out of her car after refusing to sign a traffic ticket. 65-year-old Rose Campbell was pulled over for failing to stay in her lane.
I see the signature here at the X. You're not staying in your mail building.
I don't have to.
You don't have to say it. Let's get them, but then I have to take you to jail.
Two other cops arrive on the scene.
Hey, get out of here, George. Shut up and get out of the car.
She's dragged out of her car and placed under arrest in Alpharetta, Georgia. This woman also refused to sign a ticket after being pulled over for speeding in Virginia.
Need you to sign right here?
I'm not going to sign it.
Ma'am. Okay.
But I don't have to sign it.
So, ma'am?
But I appreciate it.
If you refuse to sign the summons at this point, we'll place you under arrest. You do not have a choice but to sign the summons.
She ended up signing. So what are your rights? Do you really risk being arrested if you refuse to sign a traffic ticket? We spoke to Inside Edition security expert Steve Cardian.
What happens if you refuse to sign that ticket?
Understand, a motor vehicle stop is technically an arrest. So if you don't sign it, it's a promise to appear. The officer can arrest you, bring you before a magistrate, or have the desk officer set bail on you.
Nevertheless, the incident involving the 65-year-old grandmother is under investigation. Police released this videotaped statement.
As I was watching the video, I had some major concerns about what I was seeing. There are aspects of this video that simply do not represent who we are as an organization.
All right, here we go. China Mac, welcome back to Vlad TV.
Vlad TV, what's going on, bro?
Hey, it's your first time actually filming in our LA studio.
Yeah.
See the drum set back there?
Yeah, episode 192,000, China Mac and Vlad TV. The saga continues, but this time with the drum set behind me.
There we go. There we go. Because you're usually in New York.
Right.
Which is where you live.
Right.
So that's why you usually see the white background before.
Right.
Now you're in L.A.
Now we're spicing it up.
There we go. Now, you're actually out here for a rally, for the They Can't Burn Us All rally.
Right.
Tell me about that.
So the rally came about because I saw this video of an 89-year-old Chinese grandmother who was attacked and then poured kerosene on and set on fire. So once I saw that video and she was walking by herself and two men with masks like wrapped up attacked her. And when I saw that, I was just like, and this happened in Bensonhurst, where a week prior I saw signs up in the neighborhood where it says no Chinese wanted. Chinese are not wanted here. They are destroying our community. They are bringing COVID into the community. They're dirty. They're nasty. They need to be out of here. This is what the signs being posted in Bensonhurst and Bay Ridge area.
Yeah.
And then probably like 2 weeks after I saw that sign, the old woman got attacked. And I was like, yo, you know, enough is enough, because I keep on seeing consistently videos of, you know, Asians being attacked. And, you know, nobody is really saying anything, right? Nobody is really speaking up for the Asian people. We're basically just letting it, you know, get swept under the rug. And we're not, you know, we're not speaking up. And we're not like, you know, we're just basically targeting ourselves to be bullied and stuff by not responding, by not speaking up. So I just felt like, you know what, enough is enough, and let's make some noise. Let's make some noise in the community, right? Let's make some noise in the community and let them know that, hey, that 89-year-old grandma is not alone, and we'll come out here, you know, and we'll just keep on coming out here and make you guys feel uncomfortable until there's some type of equality in the community. And that's what the rally was about. It started with that. But once we did that first rally, we got so much love. And my brother Bobby, he called me, and he's not even Asian. He's black, right? And he called me, and he's like, yo, you know, you can't stop. You got to keep on going, because the people needs this message. This is a message that your people have never heard before. Nobody ever gave them this, hey, stand up for yourself, fight back message. And you need to give this message. The people needs this right now. So when he said that, immediately I said, yo, you know, we're going to L.A., right? Because we got so many, that day, so many people were hitting me up like, yo, you got to come to L.A. You got to bring it to L.A., bring it to L.A. So we were like, all right, let's bring it to the West Coast. And a month later, exactly a month later, we brought it to L.A.
Well, I looked at the story. The woman had her the back of her shirt burned.
Right.
So she wasn't she didn't burst into flames, luckily.
She didn't. Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. But it wasn't what happened. It was what they set out to do and what could have happened. The lady was just thank God the lady was she was able to think fast and move correctly in that situation. But what if it was an 89-year-old grandma that really couldn't move like that? That really, you know what I'm saying? And she would have been set on fire, you know? So I don't look at what happened, like, in terms of she got set on fire or not.
Yeah.
What happened was they attempted to do that, and it could have been like that. And what are we going to wait for somebody to die for us to make a stance?
Yeah, there's actually a $10,000 reward for the scumbags that were involved.
It's now like $30,000.
$30,000? And if y'all want to call me a snitch, go ahead. But, you know, go ahead and collect that reward if you know who did this shit.
Right.
Because nobody advocates for this type of behavior. An old woman trying to be set on fire.
Right.
Okay. We were on yesterday for about 15 minutes, but it was in the late afternoon. I had to replace an ID that I misplaced. So this time yesterday I was, you know, had to replace an EID. Anyway, it took me, I had to set an appointment 2 months out for yesterday's appointment. In any event, today we're going to pick back up from No One Lives Here. No One Lives Here, and it's about the massive amount of land that is available globally, not only in the United States, but globally, where people can not squat, but purchase the land, much of it on the cheap, and live, well, live in more freedom. Now, granted, you got to have the skill sets for that, but I'm just saying. So, here's some of the topics that I wanted to. Matter of fact, today, let me read the whole headline for today. No One Lives Here, Resourceful versus Victimhood. Resourceful versus Victimhood. Some of the things I want to touch on was, oh, and where I played that China Mac piece, okay, when China Mac, well, he was being interviewed on Vlad TV, because Asians, and in his case, Chinese American, because it, you know, Asian, you know, Asia is a huge place. So you have Indian Asians, Pakistani Asians, Kyrgyzstan Asians, Uzbekistan Asians, Mongolian. Not all Asians are alike now on an ethnic level. But he was speaking from a Chinese-American point of view. And, well, as I've said before, everybody, and I mean absolutely everybody, gets shit on. Now, so today's podcast show, No One Lives Here, Resourceful versus Victimhood. So some of the things we're going to mention or bring up here in no particular order, but on my program notes, and this is on Blog Talk Radio on a scrolling marquee, was Kanye West right? Was he correct? He stated that, there's a video on YouTube to verify it, he stated that slavery was a choice, and I think he did it at the offices of TMZ. And one of the co-workers, a colleague there at TMZ, got upset, said he was hurt about what Kanye said. Kanye said slavery was a choice. So we want to take a look at that today. Was that question of the day is, was Kanye right about that? Now, in the headline, once again, No One Lives Here, Resourceful versus Victimhood, I can sort of see Kanye's point. And I'll rattle off some documented things that we can go through. There was an Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad was utilized by people that decided, you know what, I am not going to remain in this situation as a legally bound slave to this particular person or plantation. And they had a choice to make. Either stay here in it or take a chance and escape for freedom. They had a decision to make. They made a choice. The Maroons, if you read about the Maroons, and Maroons were a group of people, well, matter of fact, let me get official about this. Let me go to, you can follow along on, I got to turn my phone back on. All right, while we're waiting on that to boot up, we'll come back to the Maroons, Queen Nanny, well, let's go with something I can go with right now. Black townships. The black townships of the United States, and you have black townships actually running from Canada, and going back to our Facebook page, It's My House TV, at the top of the page, I've got about, what, 4 or 5 maps. The green areas, well, I got two types of maps, the green and white map and the pink and white map. The green and white map, where you, once again, those are not LA's maps. This is Census Bureau stuff. No one lives here. So people like Harriet Tubman, she decided, you know what? She made a choice. I'm not going to live under this banner of slavery. It wasn't a lifestyle that she agreed with. So she made a choice. She made a decision to get out of it. The people who started the black townships, the former slaves who started the black townships, they did the same thing. Some, in some cases, actually in many cases, they had to buy their freedom, which is a choice. Now, you have people, here are groups of people like Fred McWhorter or Mother Priscilla Baltimore. They were born slaves. So they had a choice to make now. A, this is multiple choice. A, choice A, I can remain a slave until I die. And many decided to do that. Choice, you know what, choice B, I can wait on the government to change the law and I'll be free that way. Choice C, I can work, buy out my master, and gain my freedom that way. And then go on about my business. Choice D, become a runaway slave and find my way to a free territory. Now, those are four choices. Those are four choices that they had to make. And, of course, if you decided to run away or you decided to buy your own freedom from the master, you had to be resourceful in many cases. So that's why I put in the title today, No One Lives Here, Resourceful or Victimhood. But you have four choices. Harriet Tubman made a choice, as did many others who utilized the Underground Railroad. Josiah Henson, he decided to become resourceful instead of being a victim. Let's see who. The Maroon. Oh, let me. I got my phone up now. Okay, let's look at the Maroons. What were they about? And once again, the question of the day was was Kanye West correct? Slavery was a choice. So I'm going on Wikipedia to the Maroons, M-A-R-O-O-N-S, Maroons. Maroons are descendants of Africans in the Americas who formed settlements away from slavery. Once again, this is a group of people that made a collective choice. Often they mixed with indigenous people, eventually evolved into separate Creole cultures, such as the Garifuna and the Muskogos. All right. Regions with significant populations of Maroons were the entire continent of North America and South America. Languages, Creole languages, religion, African diasporic religions. Maroon peoples were Black Seminoles right here in Florida. Okay, John Dark was one of them. Bush and Nige, I might be butchering that word. Jamaica Maroons, Columbus, Pelanquels, and Quilboa, I might be butchering that, but they were, those are some of the groups. Historical groups of Maroons, Cimarron people, Great Dismal Swamp Maroons. Okay, history. Okay. In the New World, as early as 1512, enslaved Africans escaped from Spanish captors and either joined indigenous peoples or eked out a living on their own. Choice, choice, and choice. These people decided in 1512, I'm not going to be a victim. Okay. The first slave rebellion occurred in Hispaniola on the sugar plantations in Hispaniola. Is where today we call it, well, that's an island. And it's divided into two countries today. And on one side you got Haiti, on the other side the DR, the Dominican Republic. On the Haitian side of the island, and Haiti is the only, in air quotes, black, or what American blacks would call black, not all blacks, but what American would, it's the only black republic in the entire Western Hemisphere recognized by the United Nations. But they made a choice. Collectively, they made a choice. I am tired of these French people. These white French people dogging us, we're going to fight back, and they won. They decided we're not going on a critical mass basis. We're not going to be victims. Instead, we're going to victimize other people. You can read the rest of it and we're going to get some Haitians in here. Anyway, all right, so the first slave rebellion occurred in Hispaniola on the sugar plantations owned by Admiral Diego Columbus on December the 26th in 1522 and was brutally crushed by the Admiral. The first Maroon communities of the Americas were established following this revolt. As many of the slaves were able to escape, or people that said, I'm not going to live as a victim. I'm going to run away. That's a choice. Okay, Sebastian Lemba, born in Africa, successfully rebelled against the Spaniards in 1532. Doesn't sound like a victim to me. And banded together with other Africans in his 15-year struggle against the Spanish colonists. Sir Francis Drake enlisted several Cimarronians during his raids on the Spanish. As early as 1655, escaped Africans had formed communities in inland Jamaica, and by the 18th century, Nannytown and other Jamaican Maroon villages began to fight for independent recognition. When runaway enslaved people, once again, they decided, I'm not going to live as a victim. When runaway enslaved people from the Amerindians banded together and subsisted independently, they were called Maroons. So, long story short, Maroons were people that made a choice. I am not going to live as a slave. Now, freedom had a cost. Now, here's one thing I give about the Maroons and other people like them. They had a better grasp of the landscape, and they would set up shop in what Wikipedia and the historian was called, in their settlements, where many of those became towns or villages or whatever you want to call them. But they knew how to get away in a landscape where they would be left alone, or at bare minimum, they can see somebody coming. And that way they can probably defend themselves, of which they did. So there's a lot of information on the Maroons. Books written about the Maroons. I'm going on to read Maroon communities emerged in many places in the Caribbean, St. Vincent, Dominica, for example, but none were seen as such a great threat to the British as the Jamaican Maroons. Beginning in the late 17th century, Jamaican Maroons consistently fought British colonists, leading to the First Maroon War, 1728 to 1740. In 1739 and 1740, the British governor of the colony of Jamaica, Edward Trelawney, signed treaties promising 2,500 acres in two locations at the Cujo's town in the western Jamaican and Crawford Sound in eastern Jamaica to bring an end to the warfare between the communities. So these are people that I guess the British just got tired of getting their ass whipped by people that had collectively decided on a critical mass basis, I'm tired of it. You're not going to kick my ass and get a free pass. They fought back. It's all a choice. So it looks like Kanye West might be right on this. Now, this is with no internet connection, no smartphones, no tablets, no desktops, no laptops. No Facebook, no WhatsApp, man, none of that. No mob, but none of it. They made a choice. I'm not going to live as a victim. Now, if they can do that in 1728, going back to 1512, then we, in my opinion, just one person's opinion, just in L.A.'s opinion, and I might be certifiable mental, but in my opinion, as one person out of, what, 8 billion people on the planet, if they didn't make no excuses, if they didn't claim, now, if anybody was is supposed to, that could claim that, you know, this is in my DNA and I got post-traumatic slave syndrome, if anybody had it, people in 15, 12, and 17, 28, if they didn't claim that, what sane right does a person in 2022 with all these technologies and whatnot, you know, and particularly now, they didn't have the maps that, like, on the maps that I have posted on the It's My House TV Facebook page. There's about 4 or 5 maps here. Okay. They didn't have those maps. They didn't have, but they knew the landscape of where they were. They had to get into a position, and this is why I like, this is why I love the game of chess so much. You have to learn the board first. Matter of fact, if you don't learn the board first, you know, the name of each square and how pieces can move, if you don't know the landscape first and foremost, you're going to lose more than you win. And that applies to real life. Matter of fact, watch the movie on Netflix or Amazon, purchase the digital copy of it, Life of a King, based on a true story. A black man's true story on top of that, teaching kids how to play chess in Washington, D.C. But that matter of fact, if you ever get to D.C., go to the Big Chair Chess House is in Southeast D.C. You know, I've probably been by there because I know where the Big Chair is in Southeast D.C. But the next time I go to D.C., I got to stop by that place. But you need to load the landscape. In 2022, in my opinion, on a critical mass basis, a lot of black folk do not know the landscape of the United States. Therefore, that's why we have these shootings that continue on. Every few months, every year we get at least two, it seems like, for the last 10 years or so that I've been keeping track. But anyway, I'm talking about like a George Floyd type or Ahmaud Arbery, that type of thing. You know, something bizarre like that. So in any event, but these people and Maroons in 1512, they knew the landscape. That's why I have those maps up here again. Because if you're in an area geographically where you're discriminated against, where there's red line, where they won't sell to people that look like you, that's all right. Look at the chessboard's land. Look at this landscape of the board. There's millions of acres available that you can get. The Maroons did. So there's extensive history on the Maroons. Now, and the Underground Railroad people. Where else we have here? Okay. They were resourceful. Now, something I heard early this morning, and I have to agree with, there's no lack of resources. And I, you know what? I'm going to say that's very African. Ancient African. That was something taught in that on a continental level at one time in Africa. There's no lack of resources. However, on an individual basis, if you don't know how to become resourceful, you'll just run into lack. So when we go back to these Maroons, when we go back to these the Underground Railroad people, Harriet Tubman, no Greyhound bus line, no Megabus, no Amtrak, I mean, those things weren't even existing back then. No cell phones, none of the modern inconveniences that we have today, but what they did have on a critical mass basis that dwarfs the average human being today in 2022, regardless of race, color, creed, or religion, is they were resourceful. They knew how to feed themselves going through forests, woods, brush. They knew how to identify foods that they can forage and eat. They knew how to catch food. If they had to catch it, if they wanted to eat meat, if they wanted flesh. They knew how to make weapons out of the materials that they just found at their disposal. They were MacGyver before MacGyver. They were very, Harriet Tubman, I didn't know her, but I can say this about her. She was very resourceful, and the number one thing that we can tell about Harriet Tubman, Josiah Henson, the original Uncle Tom, and I mean that in a positive way, and we have to go through one day Uncle Tom's Cabin, the book, so we can straighten the distinction between him and Sambo. But those people and the people that were successful that decided, I'm not going to live as a victim. I'm not going to live as a slave. They were very resourceful. They knew that there was no such thing as a lack of resources. They or night. They didn't have flashlights as we have today with the batteries and all that. A lot of times, all they had to deal with was the stars in the skies. That was it. Now, when the moon was out, that helped out a little bit. I can relate to that to a teeny bit because when I was up in Vermont and I was staying at this place and I had to walk in the dark one night, where it was so dark, I can barely even see my hand in front of my face. But a full moon was out this particular night, so it was enough light for me to walk safely to the cabin I was staying in. Nothing compared to it. Now, I don't know the landscape like they did. I don't know how to make weapons, but the mindset that these Maroons and these people with the Underground Railroad who decided, I'm not going to live as a victim. Today we would call it a slave. They decided, you know what, their mindset was that there's no such thing as a lack of resources. You just recognize what resources that you do have on hand and work with that. That was their mindset. Now let's bring it up to the more contemporary times, although she's not with us in body, but we've had her son on here several times, Marva Collins. We've had her son Patrick on here at least seven times. I just spoke to him last week briefly. But Marva Collins wanted to start a school up there in Chicago. She didn't have the grandiose dreams of starting out like Umar Johnson. She didn't have an internet connection. She didn't have a smartphone. Didn't have a tablet. She didn't have nothing like that. Computers were around back then where those were the big mainframe, at Honeywell or IBM or something like that. So she didn't have any of the things that we have at our fingertips today. I mean, I'm talking on a laptop. I'm using a smartphone to look up stuff, and I'm on a landline. So she had a landline back then, but it was dial-up. But she didn't have a setup like we have right now. So, and she had a limited amount of funds. Her husband was a factory worker. But they were doing, you know, well, her and her husband was making enough to send three children, Patrick, and he has an older brother, and he had a younger sister at the time. But they were earning enough to send their children to a private school. And they lived in a duplex in Chicago. It's still in the family. I think Patrick's older brother is living in it right now. But this is documented with the Marva Collins story, which I think you can watch for free on Netflix. Not Netflix, but what do they call it? YouTube. So she and her husband, you know, put their money together and, well, first thing, they had the duplex that they were renting out. So I'm sure that the duplex income was supplementing the income, you know, for their household, which was a household of five at the time. So anyway, after the person moved out, they renovated it. And in the movie, the Marva Collins story, they document that with Cicely Tyson and Morgan Freeman. Okay. Now, she could have come from the victim point of view. I don't have this. I don't have that. I'm a woman. I'm a black woman. They want to allow black people to do it. She did not come from a victimhood point of view. And she started West Side Prep. The rest is history.
It ain't like stepping on eggs, Jake. Takes a man to kill. You man enough to kill, Jake? Hit me right there. Get me, Jack. Get me. Hit me. Hit me. You can't do it. Somebody drop this fool for me.
You got us twisted, homie. We gotta put your own work in around here.
It's like that, Bone?
It's like that.
Player to player, pimp to pimp. I'm believe you shoot me, nigga. Don't do it. Don't do it. Now I'm believe he got in there, Jake. Shit. I'm gonna get that gun, and then I'm gonna get that money. And you ain't gonna do a damn thing, because you ain't gonna shoot no cop in the back, are you?
Don't do it.
You know what they give you for that? The gas chamber. You know what the gas chamber smells like? Pine oil. That's where you headed, boy. To pine oil heaven. I'm going to get that gun, and then I'm going to get that money. I don't believe you got it in you, Jake. I'm going to go get it right now.
Oh, shit! Ah, you motherfucker!
The next one will kill you.
Oh, son of a bitch! You shot me in the ass! Okay, wait. Okay. All right, listen. Come on, Jake, I need the money. Give me the money, Jake. Give me the money, please, Jake. Give me that money!
It's not going to happen.
Well, you going to jack me now? You going to take my own money from me, huh?
I told you, that's my evidence. You want to go to jail, you want to go home.
I want to go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home.
Yeah? You want to go home?
Yeah, let me go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home. Give me the money and let me go home. Let me go home, Jake. That's right. Come on, Jake. You don't deserve this. Okay, you motherfucker.
Jake, go ahead and bounce on me. Get up out of here. We got your back.
What?
Like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you didn't. Hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here!
Jake! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jake! I need my money! Jake! Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jake! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Sixteen years ago, we broadcast a story about Marva Collins, a Chicago teacher who started her own elementary school on the city's west side, West Side Prep. Marva claimed that with love, hard work, and no-nonsense teaching, inner-city children could compete with anyone academically. It was, to many people, quite an inspiring story. But not to Charles Murray, author of the controversial book about race and intelligence called The Bell Curve. On page 399, Murray writes that Marva's celebrated anecdotes about her students are too good to be true, that there is no hard evidence of her success. We decided to check it out. Before we begin, let's go back to where we began 16 years ago.
You have it all here on West Adams Street, all the familiar big city blight. The forever broken windows, the burnt out flats, the disemboweled abandoned cars. And then you have 3819 West Adams.
The Canterbury Tales are about whom?
Jeffrey Jones.
They're about whom? How many
pilgrims?
How many were there?
There are no frills at West Side. The emphasis is on basic education, with an even stronger emphasis on literature and composition. There are no teacher breaks, no teacher desks. She is on her feet and over their shoulders all day, pushing them, cajoling them, and praising them.
Very, very good, Felisa. Very, very good. Cum laude.
And the results are apparent even to a casual bystander. Alert and challenged children being pushed way beyond the boundaries most school systems set.
Who's your favorite author?
Jeffrey Chaucer and Shakespeare.
Booker T. Washington and Hans Christian Andersen. My favorite book is The Greek Myth.
Weakness.
I like Fyodor Dostoevsky and Dante Alighieri and Shakespeare.
And your favorite book?
Divine Comedy.
Okay.
I like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, and I like Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre.
So what happened to those 34 students we met at West Side Prep? Charles Murray says by implication that their apparent intelligence and promise was a fraud, that what we saw was just too good to be true. What was it? We traced 33 of the 34 and flew a group of them back to Chicago, back to West Side Prep's new location for a reunion of sorts.
Ain't you pretty?
To see if Charles Murray's allegations in The Bell Curve are true, to see whether or not these young men and women lived up to Marva's claim. Christopher Stubblefield.
We learned to read hard work.
The 8-year-old with the big voice is now at university in Texas. And Erica McCoy Pace graduated last spring from Norfolk State University. When you saw her last, she was listing her favorite authors.
Emerson, Henry David Thoreau.
And what about the rest of our class of 79?
Michael Anderson, Taylor.
Terry Holmes, owner operator of transportation company.
Latanya Singleton, preschool teacher.
James Lowe, staff sergeant, United States Air Force.
Sabrina Yates, sixth grade teacher.
Rossell Winters, law student.
Louis Johnson, operations manager.
Xavier Jones, teacher, criminal justice major.
Craig Brunner, clerk for the state's attorney's office.
I remember I had said in front of all my classmates here that I want to become an attorney. And it's funny, I'm actually in law school, and I graduate next year. And this college told me, oh, yes, you can do it. You can do whatever you want to do. It's possible, and I'm living proof it is possible.
A number of you are teachers. Were you inspired by her to become teachers?
Definitely. She just gave so much to me personally in terms of always being reassuring. I mean, just the small things, like she would grab my face and say, pretty girl.
You're brilliant.
Yes.
Honey, you're brilliant.
That's right.
Especially Craig. She would take his head and raise it up. Speak up, honey, you're brilliant.
Right.
And, you know, after someone telling you that,
every day.
Every day. 5 days a week for 3 or 4 years, you know, that's in you. That becomes a part of you. You are brilliant, honey.
And then we were like doing Shakespeare. We put on the plays and we had
But Charles Murray stated that claims of long-term academic achievement would typically fade as these children grow up.
Sagacious means what? Means you're very what?
Right. The words that we learned, it was nice because when we left and we heard someone talking, using a word, we knew what that word meant. And now in school, a lot of times we get the reading list on the course outline. I've read most of the books on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I've read that, I read that, or the teacher will be talking about something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, 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 I read that book. All the students may feel like this.
Where's Xavier?
Right here.
You use your notes? Your West Side prep notes on Hamlet to write a paper when?
I used it in high school, and I also used it in an English lit class when I was in college. And looking back at my handwriting, I was like, wow. You know, I was like, these are good notes.
Murray also raised questions about Marva's claims that 5- and 10-year-olds who'd been labeled unteachable were capable of reading Chaucer and Shakespeare. Well, Michael Anderson was said to have a learning disability when he entered Marva's school at age 9.
I had a client just a couple months ago brought up Shakespeare out of nowhere. And we sat after having coffee for 3 hours. You know? Well, what did you learn Shakespeare? Fourth grade. I knocked him off his seat. He couldn't believe it. Fourth grade?
And there is Erica, who was considered a hopeless case at age 6.
Basically, I was told that I was borderline retarded, that I would never read. So I was basically written off.
I was supposed to be put back a couple of grades, but I wasn't when I came to Ms. Collins.
When we saw Craig Brunner in 1979, he was reading his essay about Cleopatra.
Very, very long ago, there was a queen called...
What was the secret of her success, of motivation, or what?
The confidence, how you have a brain, you can do it on your own. You don't have to wait for anybody.
She killed herself with a poisonous snake.
Very, very true.
I say to every child, for example, Morley, there's no one with your eyes. There's no one with your nose. There's no one with your hair. That makes you really special.
These days, her message and methods are repeated by teachers she's trained for her 3 elementary schools in Chicago. She is mostly on the road, giving seminars for teachers all over the country. Above all, she tells them every child is teachable. Every child can learn.
Ask the slowest children in your class how many children know the rap songs, and they all raise their hands, and I'll say them for me. And I says, good. If you can do that, you can learn the Canterbury Tales in Old English, too. I don't know half of what those rap songs are saying, but they know every line. What makes us think, then, that they become such learning disabilities when they get to school?
But Charles Murray...
Okay, I was into that audio on 60 Minutes. Marva Collins would not allow her children to label themselves as victims. Now, there might be some cases out here, like, you know, the Emmett Till case, which the trending topic on that is they found arrest warrant on that. In the case of Emmett Till, he was a victim. All right. But on a critical mass basis, the maroon population going back to 1512, throughout the entire Western Hemisphere, if you look at the history of Haiti, the black townships, some of your Gaspar Younger, who was he decided I'm not going to be a victim, and he started a village which still exists to this day. Actually, it's a state in the country of Mexico. There are numerous stories where people that were enslaved didn't go along with that they were slaves, and then that's a choice right there, mentally and spiritually. And then they took the action steps of escaping or fighting back or both. They played real life chess, because a lot of them knew the chessboard better than their captors or attempted captors. And that's why I put that map, those maps up there. But you look at it, even Marvin Collins. Now, I'm looking at redlining in a whole different light, because you don't have, I mean, once again, there's a lot of space out there. There's a lot of land out there. In some cases, you might have, matter of fact, your promised land, and this is where a lot of, this is just my commentary on this. On a critical mass basis, black Americans, and I don't know what the percentage is, we have to get out of the Egypt state of mind. Stop looking at what somebody else has built and developed. Build your own stuff. That means, now it might mean you're going to have to scope out, if you look at the common denominator of the black folks who started these black townships in the entire Western Hemisphere, because they got them in Canada, they got like about 900 to 1,000 in the United States. You got them throughout the Caribbean, the whole country of Haiti, and then you got them all down to Argentina. Looking at what somebody else has built, because when you do that, you blind yourself to the opportunities that you're standing right in the middle of. The Maroons, they weren't going for no reparations. They knew the landscape chessboard, and they decided, you know what, let's find a spot where we're going to be left alone and we can see people coming to defend ourselves. That's how they rolled. Some of those communities still exist to this day. You know, there were over 500 black townships in the state of Texas, way more than Oklahoma. They went to play. If you look at this Black Wall Street thing, the Greenwood neighborhood, that, you know, we talk about that and Rosewood, those. But nobody talks about Eatonville in Florida, 45 minutes away from me. Nobody talks about the 500 black townships in Texas. They don't talk about the 50 the black townships in Oklahoma. They don't talk about Mound Bayou, Mississippi, Holland Beach, Maryland, Fairmont Heights, Maryland, Brentwood, Maryland, I believe Glendale, Maryland, Fairmont Heights, Maryland. Those are all black townships that exists to this day. But for some reason, on a critical mass basis, we talk about Black Wall Street, which old W. Gurley, he did a good thing, but he, in my opinion, just my opinion, didn't know him. I don't know why he, in my opinion, looking at the chessboard, he built in the wrong spot. Because I'm looking at this historically, there are 50 other black towns that were never touched to this day. Same state. Taft, Oklahoma Tallahassee, Oklahoma. Tap, Oklahoma is about 45 minutes away from Tulsa. I've been that route several times. Summit is about the same thing. Summit's about 20 minutes away from Taft. Tallahassee, Oklahoma, which I've been there. Tallahassee, Oklahoma, part of that is in Wagner County, and part of Tulsa is in Wagner County. So that's the... And they weren't touching. That's the oldest black township in Oklahoma. So I'm just figuring out, you know, the time machine hasn't been invented yet. So I'm just thinking, you know, the people that Tallahassee, Oklahoma was, like, say, the first, they figured, and then even Taft was in existence before the state of Oklahoma was Oklahoma. So I'm figuring people, that you know what? It's kind of a high-risk proposition to live in Tulsa. So let's like, for instance, today. Matter of fact, let's map this thing out before I go to the phone lines. Let's see. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Let's go back in, I think, and here. Tulsa, Oklahoma, I'm going to say Summit, Oklahoma. Distance. Okay. Okay. The distance from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Summit, Oklahoma is 53.7 miles. All right. Now, drive time at going at 60 miles an hour, it's about an hour's drive. All right, now, and that's today with, you know, your average vehicle out here. But back in 1921, they didn't have the motor vehicles like we do today. So walking distance between Tulsa, Oklahoma and Summit, Oklahoma would take 19 hours and 3 minutes. Now, I'm sure they had some rudimentary automobiles back then, but it's not convenient as it is today. So I don't know how the town was founded, because I've been there twice, and I don't know how they decided to get to this particular spot today and say, you know what, this is it. This is what I do know, though. Because I'm today, in 2022, if you don't know exactly where to drive on a paved road, you're not going to find Summit, Oklahoma. If you go there at night and you've never been there before, good luck. Nowadays we got GPS in cars and we got them on our phones. But back then, they didn't have GPSs. So the founders of Summit, how they found this spot, in 2022 is well hidden. And that's in 2022 right now. And I've been there twice. Just driving in, how in the hell did they find this place? But they found a spot, and like I said, it's a night. And typically back then, who's going to walk 19 miles to harass somebody? So I'm sure they had to have that on their mind. But O.W. Gurley, with what we call today Black Wall Street, he set up camp in a hostile territory where he was easy pickings, hanging fruit and easy pickings. But like I said, the day that that happened, there were 50 other black townships to this day that were never, there's 13 or 15 of them still standing. Most of them was, all of them were set up as agricultural communities. And then the Great Migration, just a lot of people just, you know, up and left. Most of these towns were set up by families or groups of families. And like a place like IXL, Oklahoma, they might have 51 people there today. Taft, if you take out the men's prison and the women's prison, you might have about 100 or so. They can trace their roots back, you know, 100-plus years. The same as with Tulsa, all of them, actually. But the point I'm making is they knew the landscape. They knew the landscape. And they decided, you know what, we're going to set up stuff, we're going to set up our community, our town, where there's a low possibility of being made a victim. Anyway. From the last audio, once again, Marva Collins, that's why I played that 60 Minutes piece. Despite the fact what other people were saying, including Charles Murray, who wrote that article or book or whatever he did, she refused, and her kids, you know, some of them came in, the Chicago school system. I mean, when you're saying this child is whatever term, educational terms that these PhDs use in the educational system, you know, she refused to let her children be labeled victims. She really worked on their self-esteem. Anyway, the question of the day, was Kanye West right? Was slavery a choice? Let's see. Let's go to the phone lines here. 410, your mic is open.
Hotep, Brother L.A., how are you?
Oh, I'm good this morning. Was running errands yesterday to get my ID.
All right. And I want to say hotep to all of the listeners that are out there. Brother L.A., could you do me a favor before I get started?
Well, go ahead.
It's going to be related to what I'm about to say here.
Okay.
Could you...
Well, all mics are muted right now, except for yours.
Well, no. Hey, look, you know what? I don't want my boy's mic unmuted anymore. Leave it open. Please, could you look up the word community and the word nation
right now
and define it?
Just the word community. Okay, community definition. All right, I have it here. Community and a community, a group of people. Living in the same place or having a particular characteristic in common. That's the first definition I got. The second definition of community is a feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitudes, interests, and goals.
Look up the word nation for me and read it to your audience.
Nation, okay. Let me look that up, nation. Okay, nation. Okay, a large body of people united by common descent, history, culture, or language, inhabiting a particular country or territory. And they have here the North American Indian people or Confederation of Peoples.
Okay.
A simple definition is a nation is a territory where all the people are led by the same government. The word nation can also refer to a group of people who share a history, traditions, culture, and often language, even if the group does not have a country of its own.
Okay, Brother L.A., based on that, and based on what you've been saying for the last few minutes, and look, you set it up very well, because you know what? That's why I call into your show, because you always frame it in a way that you can make a subject a teachable moment. And you always go in and is the word provoke thought? Is that the right term I'm using?
Oh, yeah, that's a good word to use, provoke. Stimulate thought. Provoke, stimulate either one of them.
There you go, because you know I'm not too bright, so, you know, I have a hard time with English because English wasn't my first language. I'm going to say this, Brother L.A., and you know we go back and forth on this all the time because you refuse sometimes to admit the truth along with your boy over there. And the thing is this. You are a victim. And the thing is, you are a voluntary slave in modern times. And the reason why I say that is because the thing is this. We have bought into the white society's ideology. See, all we are is just a bunch of imitation white folk. We talk the way they do. We believe the way they do. And we'll do whatever they want us to do to protect their interest. And the biggest sellouts in this whole country is black conservatives and black liberals. And the thing is, we'll do everything the white man tell us to do to stop black folk from doing what you described. And Kanye West was right. We're slaves, and we're doing it voluntarily. I cannot get a black conservative or a black liberal to come together in their group and do what you've been preaching about for the last, week or so, going out, buying some land, and creating their own communities, because we want to be a part of what the white boy has built. No, correction, what black folks have built for white folks. And the thing is, none of us have the guts to go out there on our own. We got the skills. We got the money. And you know we identified as one group, just like, look, we are a community of people, but we don't have an agreement. And the thing is this, Brother L.A., you just read what it takes to be a community. Now, my thing is this year. You had a subject yesterday about problems or opportunities. I had a marketing instructor that says there's no such thing as a problem. A problem is only a situation to make things better. If we know that, hey, look, there's a group of people that have created a hostile environment for us, and you can't deny that. Black folks live in a hostile environment in these United States. We know how they feel about us. Now, whether you want to accept it or not, you know how they feel about us. They feel about us just like, well, I can't even say they feel about us like a dog, because they treat a dog better than black folks. Michael Vick went to prison for 10 years, and you've had some police shootings, and you've had some white folks that didn't have any authority at all shoot black folks and kill them and didn't get a day. So now you know how they feel about it. And you can't get us to go out there as a community and find some land to say, hey, look, you know what? This is our spot. We're going to organize as a nation. And we're going to set some rules and regulations where we can go by.
Two examples. I'm asking this. Two examples. What about the Nation of Islam and then the United House of Prayer for All People?
I was getting towards that. They are your modern-day Maroons. And look, let me give you this, Brother L.A. When you read the thing about community, it didn't say anything about a land area. If you read it correctly and you understood, it's a group of people that's in agreement. If you want to read it again, because, you know, I just want this to sink in. Read community again, please.
Oh, let me go back to that definition. I'm opening up a new window. Definition of community. Okay, the two definitions here. A group of people living in the same place or having a particular characteristic in common. That's the first definition. Second definition, a feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitudes, interests, and goals. And then there's another definition that throws in language.
Do we have the same characteristics?
What are the metrics we're using the same characteristics?
No, just answer the question. Do we have the same characteristics?
Yeah.
We black folks, ain't we?
Right, yeah. I'm basing it on skin tone, yeah. Skin color.
And we...
Growing up, as we call black, yeah.
And we suffer under the same oppression, don't we?
I don't know if I would use the word suffer.
Well, you don't. You can deny it all you want to, but look, we are an oppressed people. Now, you don't have to agree with me, but people that
what are we defining as? All right. Here's why I'm questioning the word oppressed. We're both talking on electronics. We both have computers. We both have internet access. I mean, what, the day before yesterday, you were talking about buying 200 acres of land. So I don't call that an oppressed person.
You
set your wife up when y'all were living in Baltimore. You set your wife up with your own, with a store. I don't call that an oppressed person.
Brother L.A., you're talking about a lone wolf here. You're talking about a lone wolf. You're using the long wolf definition.
That's the definition I'm going by.
That's right.
What was the metric you were using?
Yeah, you're using an individual. And look, I don't give a darn how much money you got. I don't care how much education you got. You still a nigga. I hate to use that term.
Another metric. Who are we a nigger to? Because I'm from the Sticks and Stones May Break My Bones school of thought. I can't control what another person thinks about me.
Yes, you can.
That's why I played the Marva Collins thing. Marva Collins didn't allow those kids to allow outside thoughts bring down their self-esteem.
Hey, brother, L.A., Sticks and Stones Will Break Your Bones. It won't break your bones, but they will literally kill you. In fact, that's what the whole thing is all about anyway. People have put a narrative out there that you ain't worth a shit. And they've been doing that for 400 years, and we have bought into it. And that's what makes us modern-day slaves. See, the thing is, Brother L.A., you can say all you want to, but your actions dictate how you feel about yourself and your people. If you think you're not a out on oppressed people, then I tell you what, you're walking around with blinders on. You're blind.
So you're saying even that with people from the Nation of Islam, United House of Prayer, you're saying they're oppressed as well?
They will admit that. They will admit that. But the thing is about them is they're trying to do something about it. They know that they oppress people. And they know that they have to put up certain defenses against it. Yeah, they know they oppress people. Listen to the speeches. Listen to Brother, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan. He'll tell you, we the people are oppressed. We're living in a hostile environment. But you see, when you've been propagandized and you've bought into the ideology, see, you don't see it because you don't see yourself as a community of people.
Well, I'm looking at the definition of oppressed right now. It says, subject to harsh authoritarian treatment. And then it says, what does it mean if someone is oppressed? Definition of oppressed, burdened by abuse of power or authority. Group identity is oppressed. Groups is always very strategic and always calculation of advantage.
I don't have to say any more. Now, if you can't derive our condition from that our situation from that definition, then the conversation needs to stop right here. But I'm just telling you now. Now, does it mean we have to stay oppressed? No. But the thing is, you're in a hostile environment. And the thing is, the whole thing is about what? You don't have an identity. Because, most of us can't identify with an identity. And you know what an identity is. It's a social construct. First thing you hear some colorful, well, I ain't black, I'm brown. Or either I'm a person of color. Well, no. This is a socio-political economics construct that they have brought out there. And it organizes white folk to be in a superior position. But all I'm telling you is, yeah, we're modern-day slaves, and we're volunteering to be slaves because you've given the formula. You said, hey, people, the Maroon Village. Taft is a Maroon Village. Those townships, Maroon, in Oklahoma are Maroon Villages. But you can't get us to go out there and live.
I agree with you on that. They're modern-day Maroons. I agree with that.
Well, you ain't got to agree with me on anything. I just had you read definitions. Now, if you can't derive our situation from
those... But now let me ask you this. Do you consider those modern-day Maroons or past Maroons oppressed people?
Where did they go out to get their groceries?
Well, they had to grow their own stuff.
They don't grow everything they need.
They didn't go to or set up their own grocery stores.
No, what do they do now? They go to a Walmart.
Oh, in Oklahoma? To be honest about it, most of them are not farmers. Most of them, they get up and get in their car, and they ride into town, and they go to Walmart and Figgly Wiggly's or Albertsons.
When they need to secure a car for their transportation, where do they go and where do they get
their car? They go into town, and they go to the local Ford dealership or whatever, and they buy a car.
Their clothes.
That's what they do today.
Do they have a bank in that town or a credit union?
Not the one towns I've been in.
Okay, well, that answers your question. Look, we're slaves.
Now,
if
in
you
some
don't
of
have
those towns
own,
like Boley, yeah. Oklahoma, they used to have a bank. But I don't know.
But
they
don't have
it
today. They don't have it today. So they don't have their own shit. Anytime you have to go to somebody else to get what you want, you are a slave. So now, hey, look, I just proved my point, but now I'm going to give you this one. Now that you know that you are oppressed, now that you know that you live in a hostile environment, as Louis Farrakhan says, you need to go out and get your own stuff and do for self. And the key thing is those people have taken the first step by getting their own stuff. But now, that's right. Now, if you go in and your community is redlined, then that's an opportunity. Fessel said, he says, you know what, there's no such thing as a problem. A problem is only a situation to make things better. If you know that you're being oppressed, then you do those things to remove the oppression or the people that is oppressing you. And we don't have guts enough to do that. We have bought into this ideology, a white ideology that says, hey, they're superior and we are inferior. Now, you don't want to believe that, but all you got to do is those definitions where we pointed out to says that we don't want to do it. We just rather live under this oppressive system, or either we want to live with this abuse because we don't want to get out there and do for ourselves. And the thing is, you got a black conservative, the only thing they do is spout out, regurgitate white, bigot, prejudice talking points. And the same thing with liberals. They spout out, that's all they do, and that's all we do. And we love it. We love it. And you can't deny that. If you deny it, you're in denial. So now, the thing is,
A person who lives in today in Jamaica, or a black person that lives in Nigeria, which is the largest, one of the largest countries in Africa, if not the largest, population-wise, are those people oppressed or not?
They're asleep. They're asleep.
You think so?
Yeah, because, see, The British never left.
You got Nigerians that are part of the OPEC cartel, Beasley.
They're slaves. They don't control their own destiny. You go into Nigeria, and I bet you, if you look around, who controls commerce in that country? That's why their ass is coming over here. They all brag about them, but that's why they come over here, because they can't. Because look, the oil they got don't belong to them. That belongs to a United States corporation or a British corporation. They're modern day, they're still colonialized. In fact, those francophones, that's what they call them, ain't it? Those former French colonies, France prints out their money. France controls how much money goes into their system. So all it is just
see.
A suit.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm reading here. OPEC. OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, is an intergovernmental organization of 13 countries founded on September 14th in 1960 in Baghdad by the first five members, and since 1965 has been headquartered in Vienna, Austria.
Vienna, Austria, not Africa, right?
I've been to Austria a couple of times.
But look, hold on.
How many countries are in this OPEC?
You said 13, didn't you?
Yeah, but hold on, I'm trying to find the member countries. But Vienna, the headquarters, and I like Austria, but Austria is lily white. Algeria, here are the countries that are part of it. Algeria, that's in Africa.
I don't need the names. What's the number? I don't need the names.
Algeria,
I know most
Angola,
of them in the
Congo.
Yeah.
They got quite a few African countries now.
Yeah, but who controls the price? The
this
spot
is interesting.
Price.
You got, let me name the countries. I wonder why it's set up in Vienna. You got Venezuela.
You know why they set up in Vienna.
United Arab Emirates. You got Saudi Arabia. You got Nigeria, Libya, Kuwait, Iraq, Iran, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Republic of Congo, Angola, and Algeria. So you got one South American country. Then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You got 6 African nations, but it's headquartered in Vienna, Austria, though.
Why is that? Now, you're talking about Middle Eastern African countries. Why is it set up in Vienna?
And even Venezuela is mostly dark.
Black.
Well,
30% of their population is black.
Yeah.
Oh, it was. But
former
countries
were Qatar, Indonesia, and Ecuador. Why? That's, yeah, man. I don't know why they got here quartered up in Vienna, Austria, though.
Yes, you do, brother. L.A., you know. You just don't want to say it. You know
the white
why.
White man's ice is colder. Is that it?
No, because the European nations and the United States controls their output. They can put an embargo on their oil right now and say, look, don't buy any more oil, or you can't sell any more oil on the spot market. In fact, they can't sell anything outside of petrol dollars, can they? Remember what happened
that.
To
well, you're
you do
right.
Know.
I don't know. I know there's petrol dollars, but.
Saddam wanted to sell his oil in euros. And what happened to him?
Well, he ain't here no more to talk about it.
That's right. So now, I'm just telling you right now, L.A., we are voluntary slaves. And you know what? The one thing I can say about our people is this. Our people knew who the enemy was or the oppressor was. And they built these townships and Maroon villages to go out there so that they could be free from that hard hand, that heavy hand that they were living under. And they were able to do it because they had an identity. And they practiced self-preservation and survival of the fittest. And
they
we're unable
that.
To do that today. And the thing is, if he's listening, you got somebody out there right now that if black folks was out there trying to do something right now, they'd be the biggest critics. In fact, if a black man goes out there, who's criticized the most in the black community? The Nation of Islam, because they want to be free of this boy. And they do everything they can to be self-reliant and to make sure they have their own stuff. They educate their kids. They don't want to be integrated with nobody else. They want to make sure that they can feed themselves and everything else. But who gets the most credit around here, the most criticism? The Nation of Islam. Because the white boy don't want you to get out from under this oppressive system. And the thing is, what you...
take on the United House of Prayer for All People, because they're real quiet. But, you know, they got their little enterprises going. They're landowners. They got restaurants and a lot of their churches. And I believe they build their own sanctuaries.
They do. But all I'm telling you is you got some people out there to do that, but all I'm telling you is this. Reverend Klieg's Shrine of the Black Madonna, he bought 18,000 acres of land down there in Georgia because they wanted to be self-reliant and they wanted to make sure that they could determine their own destiny. But all I'm telling you is, and I'm going to use a Herman Cain quote, 99.999% of us are slaves and we enjoy it. We love it. And the thing is, whenever somebody break out to try and do something, you got an old black Joe that'll go in and infiltrate whatever you're trying to do to get it back to the white boy, and we'll kill us for it. All you got to do is look at the Black Panthers. They was trying to do the same thing, but no. Kanye West was right. Yeah, we're slaves. And to think that they weren't slaves back then, all you got to do is look at your situation right here in America today. That's all I got to say. And look, you know what? Put it out there like that because I'm going to let somebody else follow me and I'm going to see if they're hypocrites or not. Because all of us are hypocrites. All of us. And I'm putting myself in it too. And the biggest hypocrites are the ones that call themselves that black Republicans and black Democrats, black conservatives and black liberals because, see, we carry the water for them boys. And we'll do anything that they ask us to do. We're sitting right in the room when they're coming up with legislation to to try to destroy us. And I'm going to give you this one before I go. That's just like birth control. That's like abortion. See, that's genocide against the black race here in the United States. Over 35 to 40 million black babies was killed. That's genocide. And the thing is, our population is supposed to be anywhere, and we're pretty close to it anyway, 85 to 105 million people. And we let them scoundrels go in and through eugenics, go in and talk us into killing ourselves. The black gangs in the United, the black gangs in these cities, that's a psyops operation. They put the drugs in our neighborhood, they give them the guns, and they terrorize our neighborhoods because we are doing the bidding for crackers. So now, if you can't see it, I can understand why, because I ain't been able to see it either, because I'm just like you. I know what you're saying is right. I know what you're saying needs to be done. But the thing is, we can't get together to do it. And we got the money, but we ain't got the mind. And the reason why we ain't got the mind is because we've been brainwashed.
There's a book on
I end on that note.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Shrine of Black Madonna. When I was up in Detroit, that's the first time I saw one of those, but I didn't know the history behind it.
Oh. Yahweh Ben, while you're looking it up, Yahweh Ben Yahweh, his whole thing was about buying property and buying land. And you see what happened to him, because he was buying up Miami. And he told a group here in Durham.
He had quite an empire, yeah.
Yeah, and he told a group here in Durham, he says, look, I'm going to give you $100,000 to start with, and I want you to buy everything that's for sale. And you saw what happened to him. In fact, they accused him of killing a drug dealer. Now, the thing is, if anybody needs to be killed in our community, it should be a damn drug dealer. But that's what they convicted him of, conspiring to kill a drug dealer. But anyway, I'll end on that note. Let some of these hypocrites come in here.
Okay, well, yeah, Yahweh Ben Yahweh, he passed away in 2007. But now his organization is still going, though. I know in D.C., they've got they had a restaurant in P.G. County, and they had one right across from Howard University, Everlasting Life, which is a raw foods. It's like two restaurants in one. They got a raw foods bar where, the seaweed salad and the kale salad is off the chain. And then, but they also have a hot bar where they serve, like, they got the best macaroni and cheese I've ever had, but their macaroni and cheese does not include dairy. It's really not cheese. It's, I guess it's made from cashew nuts or whatever. The no meat meatloaf, it looks like meatloaf, texture like meatloaf, but not no meat in it at all.
I've been to both of them, but that's a different sect. That's a different that comes under Ben Amin. That didn't come under Yahweh Ben Yahweh.
Okay. Now what I found interesting, I don't know if it's changed, but I know when I first found out about it in D.C., like I said, they're right across the street from Howard University, is everybody in there was black except for the working that was black. Except the person on the cash register was white. I thought that kind of weird at the time.
No, that's normal. That's normal. Because, see, we always want the white folk to be in control. That's normal. That doesn't surprise me a bit.
The last time I went through there, that neighborhood had been gentrified. So now you got white people in there for lunch right now.
Oh, yeah. Look, if we set it up,
changed up,
they'll come. If we build something, hey, look, we can sell to everybody. I'm not advocating just selling to one race.
Have you ever gone to Ben's Chili Bowl in D.C.?
I've been by there. I've never been in there.
Well, it used to be all black, pimps and prostitutes black. Their whole neighborhood has been gentrified. The last time I went to get something at Ben's, because it's a straight-up Reese's phone. You know, but I might go there a couple of times here when I'm in D.C. But, man, I came up off the subway, and it was white. It was packed full of white folks wrapped around, you know, all up into the alley. So I didn't like Ben's that much. That went on somewhere else. Now, the last time I was in D.C., they got one at the airport now, at National or Reagan National. So they got one there. But I remember when Ben's Chili Bowl was nothing but black on top of black. The customer base. Now the customer base, the last few times I've been in there, matter of fact, right after Obama got elected the first time, I took a high school friend of mine in there, black dude. He had never been in Ben's. I took him in there for the first time, and we were only two black people, other than the workers. Everybody else in there was white.
Yeah, yeah.
They discovered, and now it's fashionable to go into Ben's.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know what? To our credit, it was fashionable to go in there when the neighborhood wasn't gentrified. Because,
I started going, as soon as I got my driver's license at 16, because they were playing their commercials all the time, and I had some friends that, you know, I dropped in there. But, man, when I got my, when I was living in D.C., I go by Ben's about 3-4 times a year. Because, like I said, it's a straight-up greaser spoon. So you don't want to be eating that stuff on a regular. But, the prostitutes and pimps, you know, they particularly when the Lincoln Theater was still open, you know, that was the spot. But now it's been taken over by white. The customer base has. It's still got black workers.
Well, you never paid attention to the pictures on the wall, right?
I paid attention to the pictures on the wall from what I've heard, and I hated that they did this. I understand they took Bill Cosby's picture down.
Yeah, well, I hate that,
and
too.
Bill Cosby was one of the early supporters of Ben's Chili Bowl.
That's right. But now all I'm telling you is that stars used to go there. Everybody used to go there, not only pimps and prostitutes. But anybody went there. And when I say I went by there.
On the wall, you see celebrities on there. Yeah.
That's right. Because when I went by there, it was so crowded, I got tired waiting. You know, so.
That's like, say, that day when I went there out of, you know, the subway, because the spot's right in front of the subway stop. I came out the subway and looked across the street and went right back down in the tunnel.
Yeah.
See, I don't want to wait in that line. Anyway. They got one on 8th Street Northeast. They got one at the National Airport. They got one at the baseball stadium in D.C. And they got Ben's Bakery, which is in the Municipal Center building, around the corner on 14th Street.
Uh-huh.
So
now, if you think D.C.'s been gentrified, go to Baltimore.
I know the Inner Harbor and Fells Point has been gentrified for some years now.
I'm talking about in the hood. You got white folks walking their dogs at 12 and 1 o'clock in the morning. Whereas one time you had to be out there by sundown. Huh?
East or west side?
Right in the middle of Baltimore. North Avenue, Charles Avenue, all of them.
Damn.
Look,
I know North
this gentrification thing is all over the country. All over the country. Because we're not a community. We don't have an identity. And we want to be slaves. We don't want to control the space we occupy. And what you're talking about is a prime example of what's going on here. We have been brainwashed into trying to become white folk and trying to make sure that we do his will. That's what it's all about.
About Baltimore, and I used to go up there quite often myself, is with the, what was that dude that got shot and killed? Well, not, he wasn't shot. But his death was labeled a homicide. And they put about five or six police officers on trial. Gray. What was it? Gray was his last name. I forgot his first name.
Freddie Gray, yeah.
Who?
Freddie Gray.
That's it, Freddie Gray. All right. What's scary about that case is, all right, you got a black female prosecutor who they brought her up on federal charges. I haven't followed her since then, but at the time, all right, she was a black federal prosecutor. You got a black mayor in Baltimore and a predominantly black city council, and Baltimore at that time was 55% black. However, no police officer, although his death was labeled a homicide, their cases all got thrown out of court. So I thought that was real weird. You got all that so-called optical political power, black optical political power in Baltimore, but they couldn't even secure one conviction. And now that prosecutor, she's in her 30s or 40s or whatever. Now, the last I heard about it, I haven't filed her case. Now, she was up on federal charges.
Well, isn't that what happened, Brother L.A., when a black person tries to be black and tries to go in and champion black causes, they become the enemy to let you know, hey, look, you're not there to serve your people. You're there to serve our interests. And look, you got all of that blackness you're talking about in Baltimore, but see, they're controlled from by people in the county. See, they're Democrats.
Yeah, Marilyn Mosby, that's her name.
Yeah.
Marilyn
Democrat.
Mosby, she's 42, and I don't know if she's still a DA in Baltimore City, but.
No, I think so.
Yeah, but they had her up on federal charges. Or here it is, federal indictment. On January 13, 2022, Mosby was indicted by a federal grand jury on perjury charges alleging she falsely claimed COVID-19-related financial hardship and requesting one-time withdrawals of $40,000 and $50,000 of her deferred compensation funds for the CARES Act, which described, or anyway, on February the 4th, 2022, Mosby pleaded not guilty to the charges. Her trial date has been set for September the 19th, 2022, after her lawyers requested a postponement. So she's still in the hot seat.
Well, hey, look, you know what? I listen to you guys just about every day. If I don't, I go in the archives. You know the most hated politician, black politician, in the United States. Do you know that person's name?
I have no idea.
Most ridiculed, Maxine Waters. Now, Maxine Waters, during the time that this country was bankrupt and almost, everything was going down the tubes, they gave white banks so many trillions of dollars to survive, for their survival. But what they wanted to do was cut the black banks out of that money that was destined for banks to survive. Maxine Waters went to bet and said, look, a white bank, and not narrow dollars going to a white bank unless you help black banks. I ain't releasing none of these damn funds unless black banks get some of this money. And guess what? All of a sudden, they brought her up on charges. They tried to indict her until she pulled back on their ass and said, wait a minute, hold it. Here's the situation. Here's what's happening. Now go ahead on with your attempt to prosecute me. And I know they dropped those damn charges. But the thing is, anytime a black person try to do something in the interest of their people, they come up on charges. But yeah, but I listen to your broadcast.
Well, you know,
and look,
one of the former mayors of Baltimore, I forgot, Pew, she's in federal prison right now.
You're talking
and then
about,
there was another mayor of Baltimore. She was forced to step down.
Okay, the one that was forced to step down, I can't think of her name right now. You know what her problem was?
Is it her name Dixon?
Dixon, Sheila Dixon. I was there doing that.
Yeah, they made her step down.
That's right. And you know why? Because what happened is there was a group of black contractors said that they wanted a spot in Baltimore to put up a business district. And she said, look, if you support me, I'll go in and give you that land across the interstate over there by Cherry Hill. That's a black community. And the thing is, she said, I want you to come up with a plan, and I'll make sure that you get that land. Well, white folks wanted it because they wanted to put the racetrack over there. So what happened, they petitioned her just like the black general contractors did. The guy that was leading that whole thing, because he had organized all of the black contractors, he committed suicide. He was right-handed, but the gunshot wound was on the left side of his head. And the gun was laying down there on the right side. So evidently, somebody wasn't thinking, or he wasn't thinking when he committed suicide. Or else after he shot himself in the head, he must have put the gun in his right hand and dropped it on the right side of his body. They got rid of him, and Sheila Dixon was set up by one of our own, and I go right back to these old black Joes. They can get anybody in our group to go ahead on and set us up, a la Mayor Barry. And the thing is, what happened is she made the mistake of dating this guy and using funds, and that's how they was able to go in and get her out of there. And look, guess what? Guess what's on that property now? Next time you go to Baltimore, go to Sam's and go to Walmart over there in that spot that was supposed that she had designated for the black general contractors to go in and set up a business district for black folk, or either just set up a black business district in Baltimore. Just go there and look at that.
All right. Sheila Dixon, she resigned and went on probation. January 6, 2010, as far as a plea bargain, she had to resign from mayor. And then Catherine, she was sentenced to 4 years probation. All right. And then, what's her first name? Catherine Elizabeth Pugh. They are on February 27, 2020, Pugh was sentenced to 3 years prison, following 3 years by probation, ordered to pay $17,800 in fines. She had to report to federal prison in Alabama, and according to federal prison inmate system, she was released on April 1st of this year. So that's two black female mayors of Baltimore, the last two that they sent packing.
Right.
And
but
Baltimore's
LA.
Got a lot of black women.
But let me ask you this. How much money do you think Glenn Denon stole while he was in there? How much money do
you
think
know what? I have no idea.
O'Malley?
Because he was in there for
O'Malley.
Two terms.
Yeah, and O'Malley. Now, look, let me give you this one. O'Malley appropriated millions of dollars to his brother to put up signs that says believe.
I remember those
pamphlet. And you remember? Were you there then? And you saw those signs?
Yeah, I remember those signs. Matter of fact, you know what? When O'Malley was the mayor, that, and I'll put it this way: I have nothing against Martin O'Malley myself, but when he got in, I was working on buying, it was a block of 19 houses, and I put together a partnership so we can buy up the block. And some of those houses did not need to be demolished, so I got a call one day saying that the block was being raised. I got my car and drove up to Baltimore. And like he said, the block was being, and I had just gotten a building permit to renovate those places that we had bought. We had bought about half the block at that time. So I got a hold of a person in charge of, you know, building inspection code enforcement who had signed off on us, giving us permission to, you know, to rehab the places. And he told me that the mayor had, you know, he just got elected. And he, what he told me, he said the Civic Association, they wanted it down. So I found out who that was. Long story short, from that, I said, that's when I pulled out of balls when I started doing stuff in Pittsburgh. And that's when I discovered politics and economics go hand in hand, particularly in a large city like Baltimore.
And
but
not only that.
But O'Malley, he had just got elected when they did that.
And look, Brother Elliot, the whole thing was driven by those white big shots in the county. See, we're a black face.
Now, hold on. You're talking about the ones that live in Baltimore County, not Baltimore City.
Yeah, well, there's not a white majority in Baltimore City. All I'm telling you is that white folks control those politicians that live out in the county, and whatever they're supposed to do for them, that's what they do. And
well, you
look,
know what was interesting? The lady that was head of the Civic Association, which lived right across the street, it was one of those, you know, alley houses type things. That's the kind of block we were trying to get. I had to go through a city mediator just to get a sit down with her. But I said, look, I was willing to donate, me and my little group, donate one of the houses, because she was talking about they wanted a community. Because I was trying to find out, what did whoever promise you so you would even go through with that? But I never got that answer. So after that, I pulled out of Baltimore and went to Pittsburgh.
Well, you didn't have, you know what, you already knew the answer. She was the mouthpiece for somebody that didn't want you to have
it. Right.
Yeah, they brought her out to do that. So all I'm telling you, Brother L.A., yeah, we're voluntary slaves, and we do have a choice, but we won't take that choice. So now you can take it for what it's worth. What you've done is you verified everything that I've been saying in an offhanded way. But the thing is, buddy.
You know, after that, I was done not only with Baltimore, but any city of that size, anywhere close to that size, that's why I went country. And now there's some politics with country stuff, but I can manage that. So far, I've been able to manage it.
Well, that's because you're a lone wolf.
Well, that's...
Now, if you're a lone wolf, but now if you go in there and look, I gave you the articles. The New Orleans and Stevie Wonder and Wesley Snipes bought a bunch of land down there in Georgia. And the thing is, they did everything they could. They come up with trumped up ordinances and everything else to get them out of that land. And look, yeah. Dr. York was a bastard. He was a piece of shit. But
so
the thing
know,
is,
I,
he paid for that.
I don't know much
thing.
About Dr. York. All I know about Dr. York is, you know, they bought a whole bunch of land down there, and he got sentenced to federal prison for what, child molestation or child, I don't know, trafficking, whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm
excited. Was that trumped up or for real? I don't know.
It was for real, but the thing is, the land was bought and paid for. But they used it as an excuse to take the land from those people. Yeah,
okay.
Dr. York, they had nothing to do with the purchase of the land, but they didn't want him to be there. But they didn't want him to be there. And look, Wesley Snipes, guess what? After he and Stevie Wonder bought the land, and somebody else was in on this, after they bought the land, guess what? IRS came after Wesley Snipes. And I don't know if they own all of that land they bought down there. But all I'm telling you, Brother L.A., the handwriting's on the wall. You just don't want to read it. And I know your boy don't want to. You know, hey, look, there's obstacles we got to overcome. But the first obstacle we got to overcome is a lack of an identity and a unwillingness to go in and get out of this situation we're in, oppressive situation we're in. Because, see, we're in denial. We don't want to believe that there are forces out there that want us to stay in the condition we're in. You know, this is a capitalistic system. Everybody can do anything they want to do. That's a damn lie. Bring your boy in here. Let him talk so he can really show people how this thing really works.
Okay, well, we got some time left. 314 area code, your mic is open.
Hey, L.A., I ain't got time to listen to that, man. What else is going on?
I'm up here. I thought I was in front of a fan, but I can't feel it at times.
What's going on with your property down in, or your project down in Florida?
It's coming along slow. I'm organizing a team so we can get in there. Because it's almost July right now. Because we only got one day a week to go up there. That's Sundays.
Huh?
Huh? No, I can only go up there on Sundays, so I got to go up there with some people. That's the only day of the week I can, because it's 3 hours away from where I'm at.
And what's your plans for it?
Essentially, I'm not going to set it up where I got about maybe 4 or 5 dwellings on it that when we go up there, you know, we can go up, pull them out, set them up, mobile types, not mobile homes, but assemble them, spend weekends or maybe a few days there, then disassemble them, put them back, you know, on a U-Haul or something like that, and then bring them back, you know, wherever it's going to go. So, because to put in, I got to get the cost on putting in, you know, wells and stuff like that. Not wells. Yeah, wells. So right now, I'm just trying to do the simplified stuff that'll be inexpensive. But I got one day a week on which I have time to go up there, and that's typically Sundays. And like I said, it's 3 hours there, 3 hours back. So.
Well, look, you ain't got much time. You don't spend too much time listening to all that damn mess. It don't make no sense. And stay away from them people that are always talking about this fictitious, fanatical grouping that don't exist. And people have been talking
about
it.
Oh, the we and they?
We and they and us and all this stuff. You know the reason why I tell them us don't get together? Because us don't want to. And find you some good people to work with. It ain't going to be, there's not going to be no black land, a nation here in the United States. That ain't going to never happen. How in the hell are you going to build a city that you're going to exclude everybody else? And see, the thing is, when they talk about the people that do this, they usually elite. And the one that don't get to do it is still in the predicament that they're in. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah. See, I just watched a video about a week ago on somebody that I know you know. You probably even knew him when he was living. Herman Russell. So I get inspiration from people like this because he started off, you probably know his background better than I do. But, I mean, he was, you know, he started off with humble beginnings. So I'm looking at, okay, he went from A to Z. And, I mean, you can't deny that the man did pretty well for himself. So I look at people like that.
As many Herman Russell stories you don't hear about, and rightfully so. But you got these people that talk this crazy mess. They ain't going to never do anything. All they're going to do is talk. They can name names, name dates, put half stories out there. Ain't got two nickels to rub together toward anything. They want to hope people to open up. You know, if a person opened up a bank, I don't care who owns the bank. And I showed you how that's done several months ago. Mm-hmm. Well, banks ain't going to be lending no toxic loans, would you? You're going to go by
no,
the same
that's not good sense.
And rules. So some fool going to come in there talking about, I need some money to do. I said, where's they going to say, well, what are you talking about doing? Oh, I've been thinking. Then they get pissed off. Go out there and raise your own damn money. Get your own group and do what you're going to do and stop talking about it. Talk. Chitlin', dribbling, juice talkers. Fish mouth, chitlin', dribbling, juice talkers is all they are. Pay attention to them. But no, go and do what you're going to do with yours and set an example so somebody can see it.
And that's, see, that's why I bring up a person like a Marvin Collins. They're examples out here. So I'm just saying follow those examples.
You ever notice when blacks talk about doing something, it's either a grocery store, it's either a school, or teach somebody else's kids they ain't taught their own. Or you talk, what else do they do? Let's name them. Come on real quick. You got a few minutes. Grocery store, school. What's some of the other
gas stations, convenience stores. I've been seeing people talking about let's buy the block.
Hair supply. They ain't gonna,
the beauty supply places.
Yeah. Where's the steel mill? Where are the uranium?
Now, I haven't heard no
where's
kind
the
of talk like that.
Mineral extraction.
I haven't heard no kind of talk like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, heard no kind of talk like most of the businesses that, now I'm just one person that I hear blacks talk about, and I'm just one person,
mm-hmm.
is, well, every, in my opinion, a lot, there's not a whole, I don't hear a whole lot of bigger projects.
Yeah, making like cupcakes. There's nothing wrong with these things now. There's nothing wrong with those things now, but it ain't no nation. You might go out and wholesale some canned goods and put them on a shelf. Right?
Mm.
Nobody
well,
that's working a professional job is going to come home and do farming. Right? It's just literally impossible. The convenient way is the best way, usually. That allows you to expend your time, ideas, and efforts towards something else. Who the hell will come home after running an operation and working a garden?
Hmm. Well, like I said, we're used to the comfort and convenience.
Where's the airline? Where's the airline at?
You know, the last airline that I knew about was Air Atlanta, which was put together by a black guy, but that went out of business. I don't know if anything's come up since then. There might be. I haven't heard
about
it.
At least he tried. You know, I'll tell you something else.
Yeah, he did try. And then there was a guy named, Theodore Holmes. I don't know if he's still living. He had a chicken franchise in the D.C. Baltimore for a brief time called Chicken George. Had lines out the door. And he had a pretty good product,
churches,
too. But he went out of business. And then up
and
in your neck of the woods, Sweetie Pies.
Yeah, when churches first started, they'd done the same thing. Sweetie Pies just opened up a restaurant where people can come and talk and gossip. That's basically all it was. Canned goods, open up a large can of string beans, put them in a heater and heat them up and come in. People walk down the line and serve. That's basically all it was. Restaurant.
Hey,
we need to
what's the status? Because I haven't heard nothing since his son got arrested. The restaurant still open in St. Louis?
Those things are popular for a moment, L.A. Sooner or later, people get tired of this stuff. The Roberts Brothers had one. You know who used to come? They had one out on West Florida, Hallsbury.
Mm.
No, West Florida.
Sweetie Pies, the only reason why I knew about Sweetie Pies was, you know, when they were running that show on Oprah's network. That's how I found out about it.
So
there's a lot of that stuff they do fix.
People won't come together. Same old, same old. Italy, can't you come up with some more skits rather than that one with Jake and Pelican Bay?
Yeah, I got to get a new converter and get new material in there.
Let my kid listen to that L.A.
I'll get a lot of that.
The kid, about the one going, that's bucking and going to shoot this dome off. Man, you can't let your kid children want to listen to that.
Well,
there's a whole good motivation stories out there.
There is a lot of motivational things out there that people really need to hear. They don't need to hear about certain graphics.
And talk about couples. Look at all the black and white couples that are successful in the United States. Black males, 30% of bachelorettes marry white females. Why do they do that? Well, they do it because it's a position and because it's beneficial. Right?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, I imagine anybody who marries anybody is looking at the value of the person.
Who they want to.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Johnson and his first wife, I don't know if he was remarried, but his ex-wife, they were a power couple. They started BET, so that's something that a black couple did that was successful. Kathy Hughes was married to Dewey Hughes. They got divorced, but they purchased WOL, which is now Media Empire.
Yeah, look at all we covered in 8 minutes rather than an hour and a half talking back and forth the same old jip jive as they talk about in the hood. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Okay. On that note, people, everyone have a good rest of the day. It's almost 1 o'clock here.